Our study tonight is out of Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 1 through 17, the sovereign potter and the stubborn people, recipe for severe judgment. God is totally sovereign over men, so that he can either bless or punish. And yet the sin of man is so great that the hardened and rebellious will still stubbornly reject him, bringing on themselves enormous judgment. This was the case in ancient Judah of Jeremiah's day, and viewing this fact in Jeremiah 18:1-17 is very instructional for us. I want to read the verses and then we'll look at it. Jeremiah chapter 18:1-17. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause thee to hear my words." Then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, he wrought a work on the wheels, plural. And the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter, so that he made it again, another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make it. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as this potter, saith the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so are ye in my hand, O house of Israel. At one instant I shall speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to pluck up and to pull down and to destroy it. If that nation against whom I have pronounced turn from their calamity or evil, I will repent of the calamity that I thought to do unto it. And at what instant I shall speak concerning a nation and concerning the kingdom to build and to plant it, if it do evil in my sight, that obey not my voice, then I will repent of the good wherewith I said I would benefit them. Now therefore go to, speak to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I frame evil against you and devise a device against you. Return ye now every one from his evil way, and make your ways and your doings good. And they said, There is no hope. We will walk after our own devices, and we will every one do the imagination of his evil heart. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, Ask ye now among the Gentiles who had heard such a thing. The virgin of Israel has done a very horrible thing. Will a man leave the snow of Lebanon which cometh from the rock of the field? Or shall the cold flowing waters that come from another place be forsaken? Because my people hath forgotten me, they have burned incense to vanity. They've caused them to stumble in their ways and from the ancient paths to walk in paths in a way not cast up, to make their land desolate and a perpetual hissing. Everyone that passes by shall be astonished and wag his head. I will scatter them as with an east wind before the enemy. I will show them the back and not the face in the day of their calamity." All right. And still another object lesson, God told Jeremiah to learn of and thus clarify to Judah his infinite sovereignty over the nations, that Judah might revere the Lord and repent of her wicked idolatry. The Lord sent Jeremiah down to the potter's house and there to hear a message from him that was connected to what the potter was doing while making clay pots there. I believe they have one of these things that are set up at Sturbridge Village, except they don't have the two wheels. The potter has a wheel on the top, but he runs it with kind of like a... Remember how you used to run the old Singer sewing machine that had a pedal that went up and down? I think that's how they do it. But in the old days, they didn't... you'll notice they had wheels here. You had a rock around... rock ledge at the top, and you had a round rock ledge at the bottom, down where the man could run it with his feet, and there was an axle running between the two, so they were called the wheels. And the potter would push with his foot down here at the bottom to get the bottom wheel going. Of course, it would turn the top wheel, and he'd slab a lump of clay on the middle of the wheel right there. And then, if you've seen clay, as the wheel is turning, the potter starts to form the clay and starts to come up one edge like that very slowly, and it makes the whole pot come up. And then you can actually make a curve and so forth. My son was in, he took pottery in at Northwestern Community College, absolutely loved it. But every now and then the clay is marred. Either you make a mistake or there's something wrong with the clay, you didn't get a bubble out of it or something, so you have to squash it down, so you stop it, clump it all the way down, and then you just you do it all over again, and you run this wheel and run it up. So that's what the wheels were. So he went down to the potter's house, and when he arrived there, Jeremiah saw him at work producing a clay pot on the wheels. Ryrie explains that on a vertical axis were two circular stones. The lower one was spun by the potter's feet, causing the upper one to rotate. The clay was placed on the upper wheel in the center, and the potter would carefully use his hands to form the base and rising edges of the clay pot while it spun around on the upper wheel. The vessel that Jeremiah first saw the potter forming was marred in his hand. So I punched it down into its original clay mass and began to make another vessel as it pleased him. They also, the potters will have water handy, because you have to have water. If you don't have water, your dry hands can dry and actually crack and the clay. So they would have water. You dip the water in there, keep getting your hands wet, and then you form a very smooth pot as it comes up. Of course, when the pot is nice, you let it sit a little while, and then you put it into an oven, and you cook it, you bake it in order to make it firm. And then if you want to, you can glaze it and paint it and so forth. But that's the way they did. In the old days, they didn't glaze it or anything, just regular pots. Well, the vessel that Jeremiah first saw the potter forming was marred in his hand, so he punched it down into the original clay mass and began to make another vessel just as it pleased him. God then spoke to Jeremiah with a message for him to give to the people of Israel, a message that he was like the sovereign potter and the clay in his hand was like the nation Israel. This is actually a very excellent illustration, because the Bible tells us that God formed Adam from the dust of the earth. He actually formed him just like a potter would make something out of clay. And here is God, the sovereign potter, and he's making the nations kind of like a clay pot. So it fits beautifully. I mean, think of each one of us. Each one of us was, our DNA and so forth was put together in the womb of our mothers, and God decided what was going to go into the DNA and what elements would be produced there to produce exactly the type of person that he wanted to produce. And it's fascinating, but God is absolutely sovereign over every single one of us. Anyway, then God spoke to Jeremiah with a message for him to give to the people of Israel, a message that he was like the sovereign potter and the clay in his hand was like the nation. At what time God would declare judgment on a nation or a kingdom, to pluck it up and break it down, to destroy it like the potter destroyed his initial formed clay pot, he could otherwise decide not to destroy it if the nation repented of its evil, so that it no longer was spiritually marred in his hand. See, the problem that is marring the vessel of Israel at this point is sin. Now, God views it as a marred vessel. But if you repent, then the mar goes away. If the mar goes away, you don't have to destroy the vessel. You can, you know, put it in the oven, cook it. However, at any time that a nation God had decided to develop and build, only to find that it did evil, God could decide to change his plans and instead destroy that nation in judgment. Why? Because he found out that it was marred. So, God wanted Jeremiah to give this illustration of the potter and the clay to the people of Judah, informing them that as the sovereign potter, he was planning to destroy them in judgment for sin, but that if they repented, there was the implied hope that he would change his plan and spare them. For this reason, God urged the people through Jeremiah to repent, that he might spare them. This is another one of the cases where the grace of God is seen in the Old Testament. Liberal theology used to like to critique the Christian faith by saying the God of the Old Testament was a God of judgment, or the God of the New Testament was a God of grace. The God of the Old Testament, I don't see any difference between the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament. In the book of Hebrews, we see our God is a consuming fire, so he can be judged. But here in the Old Testament, God allows the people of Israel, he's already told them, I'm getting ready to judge me. But if you repent, I will change. I'll stop. I'll correct it. It shows us that God really didn't want to have to judge his people. God never takes delight in judgment. We never see that he delights in that. His righteousness demands that he has to judge, but he doesn't like to judge. He doesn't like to punish people at all. However, this illustration from Jeremiah did not cause Judah to repent, for she was committed to idolatry, choosing to stay committed in her own plans in great stubbornness. In fact, after Jeremiah gives this message, we are not covering it tonight, but beginning at verse 18, the people don't like his message, so
they get together and they decide that they're going to badmouth Jeremiah and reject his words and make life difficult for him. They have, at this point, the people of Judah have absolutely no fear of God and certainly no fear of his prophet. And so they're very ripe for judgment. I'm amazed as I look at the book of Jeremiah, the tremendous long suffering of God. God put up with these people for 40 years. And he told Jeremiah going in that nobody was going to pay attention. They were not going to repent. But you go anyway. It just demonstrates the grace of God. Well, Jeremiah had to give a message from God of great judgment to stubborn Judah, verses 13 to 17. Jeremiah was to claim that Judah alone had decided no longer to follow her God. Unlike all the pagan nations that resolutely followed their false gods, Judah's people had done what was unnatural among the nations, opting to depart from their true God, a gross deviation from the norm for any nation. That's very true. If you look at all the pagan nations around Israel, there's no record whatsoever that any one of them gave up their gods for some other god. Israel is the only nation that gave up her God for pagan gods. So it was seen as unnatural. In fact, I believe there's another passage, could be even the book of Jeremiah, where God says, you know, check around. See if there's any other nation around that's forsaken even its pagan gods for another god. And you won't find it. But in Israel, she sinned. The melting snow of the mountains of Lebanon, that would be Mount Hermon, which always has a snow on the top of it, never vanished from its rocky slopes, and its cool waters never ceased to flow as the snow would melt. But Judah's people had acted unnaturally. So there's a huge contrast between the natural faithfulness of melting snow from Lebanon and the unnatural Judah. That's a picture that is here. Judah had thus unnaturally forgotten God, burning incense to idols that made her stumble as she left the ancient righteous paths for unknown idolatrous ones, causing her to wander to her harm. It's interesting, God points out, when you left me for these false gods, you had a rough road, because the false gods couldn't help them anyway, and these false gods, false idolatry, was strange to them, so it was a very rocky road. They're leaving the comfortable road of following the Lord, and they're following a rocky road with idols, and they're unhappy. It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. But anyway, sin isn't very logical anyway. Judah's land would thus be laid waste in judgment, the nation becoming an object of lasting scorn, as all the Gentiles who passed by would be appalled and shake their heads in mockery. God would thus scatter them among the nations like a wind from the dry, hot desert to the east, and God would show them his back, which is a picture of rejection and judgment in the day of their disaster, rather than his face in blessing. Remember the blessing of the high priest, may the Lord's face shine upon you and give you peace. The face of the Lord, the face of a king to shine upon you, to look at you, was a demonstration of acceptance and blessing. God says, I'm going to show you my back, which means you're not going to be blessed. You're going to experience my judgment. So for rejecting the message of his total sovereignty over them as to whether he blessed or whether he punished them, deciding in their unnatural, stubborn rebellion to stick to their idols, God would severely punish Judah's people. A couple of applications. First of all, may we recall how vulnerable we are to God's absolute sovereignty over us, that we reverently obey and not disobey him. We're currently in the church era of the Laodicean church, and we're going to get to that in the last Sunday in November. And the big part, the big overriding rule and lesson that God is trying to teach us in our era is to get back to a reverence for God, fear for God. Our Puritan forefathers had much more. The ones who came to this country had a deep reverence for God. And that's something we've gotten away from as Christians, and that's what God looks for. But this is something the Lord has been working, I know, in my own life with regards to recognize he's absolutely sovereign, and he wants me reverently to obey and not disobey him. Second, if we note that we or others are functioning in an unnatural way in the spiritual realm, as Judah was in Jeremiah's era, may we know that spiritual stubborn rebellion is involved, and adjust accordingly. When a person is in a state of rebellion, they will actually make decisions and do things that are that violate logic. It's incredible. And when that happens, that's something to observe and to watch for. But if there is a stubborn rebellion that is involved, we need to be careful and continue to live the truth, promote the truth, and teach the truth. But in a situation like that, it's entirely up to the hand of God. Jeremiah couldn't get these people to repent. He's just the messenger of God. He's out there giving the message. And yet they've chosen to be very, very rebellious. He goes to them with a message, and he says, Jeremiah, it's no use. We're not going to listen to you. And all Jeremiah can do is just leave it in the hands of God. And sometimes that's all you can do, is just leave it in the hands of God. And so we need to do that. However, if we discover that we have a stubborn streak within us, boy, we need to correct that, repent, get right with the Lord, confess, because we can actually get into a situation where we ourselves become hardened and we start going down a path. And after a while, we think we're okay, but we're not. And that's where it gets pretty dangerous with the Lord.